welcome, everybody. It's time once again for the next chapter with Charlie Hedges. As he explores turning the page on his life and yours. Hey, Charlie.
Hey, Paul. The show today is being recorded on April 22nd, 2020, and we're more than 5 weeks into our California state quarantine, in which most of us are expected to stay home, go out only for food or what's being called essential needs. Basically, I'm finding that it's a never-ending Home Alone or Groundhog movie day. Now, we continue with the fourth edition of our new series called Conversations in Quarantine, in which I call an old friend that I have not spoken with for months or even years, as was the last episode with Caitlin Domner, who I haven't talked with in a decade. Today's conversation will be with my personal coach, Dina Crowder, with whom I have not spoken privately since last year. Dina never ceases to impress me with her insights into what I call life, the universe, and everything. I can't wait to discover insights of Dina into quarantine and what she has gleaned from her high-performing clients. Before we begin the conversation, let's talk just a bit about Dina, ever so highlighting it. Dina Crowder is known as the most innovative strategist and consultant for creators and leaders. Her clients include Grammy and Emmy Award winners, CNN heroes, founders, writers, performers, educators, and upstarts from the industry. In her latest achievement, Dina had the honor of participating as a TEDx speaker on the subject of the power of you. Now, I wonder how many are feeling that power of you in the quarantine today. Some are thriving while others are struggling deeply. And that's what I plan to talk about. So, Paul, why don't we get Dina on the line and proceed with this rather extemporaneous chat.
Hello.
Dina Crowder.
Charlie Hedges.
Charlie Hedges, how are you?
I'm fabulous. How are you, Charlie?
I am good. I know you just came from a conference. Are you mentally exhausted, or are you okay?
No, I am feeling fabulous because one of the things that we discussed in the conference was beginner's mind, striving always to have an openness and a freshness of mind when you're approaching whatever your next thing is. So I've come out of the conference with a great feeling of spaciousness and uplift.
That's interesting. You know, as I'm studying now, I've mentioned several times over the air that, you know, I'm studying mysticism and contemplative prayer, and that is the beginner's mind, and in meditation, is very important. That once we seem to know things, we lose the brilliance of the beginner's mind and the curiosity and the insight, and we begin to think we know too much, and it actually becomes a disservice to ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
so
true.
You know, I was thinking, do you realize that we have not held an in-depth conversation, just you and I talking, since 2019?
No, I didn't know that.
It is true. You know, we've texted every now and then and, you know, kind of touch base. And I attended one of your brilliant seminars, but you and I, you know, that was with, you know, a couple dozen other people.
Yes.
And you and I didn't have a chance to chat. And so I certainly miss you and your brilliant insights.
Oh, thank you, Charlie. Well, it's been an unusual start to the year. So you have a good excuse.
Yeah, it really has been an unusual start. So, you know where I want to start in these? I'm doing this. You are my fourth episode in what I'm calling the Conversations in Quarantine, that is it's a bit extemporaneous and a bit planned, but it's not like my other series, other podcasts, where this is, they've always been conversational, but this is more conversational than ever. And so what I'm going to do is, let's begin with the mundane, Dina, and sure. And tell me, what's life like in the Crowder household these days of quarantine? You know, I'm guessing that you have continued to find a way to stay very busy.
Charlie, how did you know? You're telling my business.
Well, I see. I get your Facebook posts.
Yes. It has, it's been fascinating because it seems to be that with the world going to hell in a handbasket due to the virus, that it is activating people on an inner level. In this time of crisis, people are remembering their spirit. They're wanting to connect to something deeper. They're feeling unmoored and confused. They're realizing that the normal, everyday, habitual ways that they have either sought comfort or sought answers, they're either not there or not working. They're saying, wait a minute, maybe I need to try a different method. Maybe I need to go on the inside and figure some things out, straighten some things out, get in alignment, because where I have been, I can't go back to, and I'm not quite sure. I don't have the right tools. I don't have the right clarity to get to where I'm going.
Boy, I really want to get to that. I'm going to get to that in just a little bit, but I truly want to get to that. And you seem to be a focal point for all of those discussions, because as an executive coach and a friend and a leader of people, that really falls right into your bailiwick of those kinds of questions. Those are the issues that you seem to focus so much on.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, there's the real essence, I believe, of this coronavirus for not just the people that I know, but in general everywhere, is a crisis of meaning, a crisis of purpose. That is what is bubbling up from within people, and that is where I stand and serve. Absolutely right.
So this is new to me, because, you know, I live in a world of meaning and purpose. Of always, as you know, I'm contemplating that on a daily basis. What do you think is driving people to go to meaning and purpose? Are they reevaluating their lives and what they're done and seeing, and what they've done and seeing that maybe this is not contributing to a legacy or a passion fulfillment or something that I am, if I can use the word, called to do, that I'm more in pursuit of money or fame or acceptance, and not in pursuit of those things that are driving me deeply at my core, and I've yet to access those. Do you think it has something to do with that?
I think it has everything to do with that. People cannot be satisfied by the same things on the surface, and that is not to cast aspersions on, you know, just our comforts or preferences or even cheap thrills, right? But whatever our routine, the busyness, the habits, the reaching, the striving, whatever has been usual and normal that we have referenced and relied upon, that's been upturned. That's been shaken up. And so with all this shaking going on, people are wondering, well, wait a minute, this whole deck is being reshuffled all over the globe. What does that mean for me now? Because am I leaving a legacy, which you asked? What have I done with my life? What am I going to do with my life? Am I going to do something? Am I here for a purpose? And really, if these systems or these routines that I was putting all of my faith, energy, investment in are not giving me the return that I expected. For example, all of the 10 million people who lost their job in March alone and don't know how they're going to put food on the table or keep a roof over their head. For those and many, many more who are losing their jobs in the month of April or who are being impacted, but maybe not so drastically, but they're being impacted in other ways, they're asking all of those questions, and they're asking them with urgency. They're asking them with a passion. They're saying, wait a minute, maybe I've been had.
I've fallen prey to the American dream.
Yes. What is the American dream? I thought it was this one thing, but maybe it's not that. Maybe it's time for me to reimagine what the American dream is. That's what we are seeing. We're seeing it on an individual level, and we're seeing it on a collective level.
I really like that verb, reimagine. I think it is time for reimagining. Now, you know what I'm curious is you primarily deal with high functioning or high level individuals. They seem to have a handle on all of this, and yet now you're saying that the people that have achieve success in the eyes of society are not feeling themselves quite so successful as perhaps an artist may be, because an artist is energized by inner passions and inner desires that are more or less indefinable, yet must come out and be demonstrated in some sort of tangible manner. These other ones, you know, the other situation are, you know, it's audience response, likes, comments, you know, all the sort of crazy data confirming situations out there.
Charlie, I think from the high functioning people to people who, you know, high-functioning A-type people, to people who would consider themselves having a, you know, just much more, quote-unquote, regular life, I really see that it's shaken up all classes, all types, artists, executives, civil service workers, as well as people who are retired and are sitting on a very healthy and robust savings. Because no matter how much money you have, the world that you knew is changing drastically and may not go back to the way it was. And this is very destabilizing, whether you have a little or a lot. If you have a less, you have less leverage or let's say no savings and maybe you got furloughed or laid off, it's more dire and
Yes. Perhaps,
you know, suffering. You're going to really perhaps suffer with your family in the near future. But I haven't met anybody who isn't in some way impacted and really feeling this in deep ways.
Well, you've met one. it was like I've repeated this on the podcast probably every week. It was like somebody came out with the COVID stipulations of social distancing, stay at home and stay away from people. And as the introvert, I say, I've been planning for this day my entire life.
Yeah, well, you get to go into the interior castle of your soul.
I do, uh-huh. And that's a great way to put it.
Mm-hmm. And maybe, you know, maybe your impact is also as present. It's just doesn't look like other people's, because the call for everyone is an interior quest. But for those who have not developed a relationship with going in the same way that you have and really enjoying it and appreciating it, then they're having maybe facing some more overt challenges and having more emotional reaction. But our globe is being asked to go on an interior, let's even call it a hero's journey, to reimagine who we are, how we're being called to stand and serve.
To stand and serve, and also in light of tragedy and consequences, and because the hero's journey is not the prettiest thing in sight. There are great difficulties that occur within the hero's journey that makes the hero the hero. And we are certainly encountering those today. Now, you know what I'm curious about? I'm thinking of your style, and I only have your and my personal relationship in your coaching style. And then on two occasions, I've seen you work with, a smaller group of 15 to 30 people or so, and see the impact you have on them. And I don't see those people, are a lot of those people facing these issues too, or are they your more sort of satisfied people with who they are inside?
And when you say facing the issues, are you talking about issues of purpose?
Issues of purpose, issues of COVID-19, issues of wondering, am I going to make it or not? They seem to so absorb your teachings. That last teaching you did on magic storytelling was indeed magic, and you asked a couple questions that were so profound, and it got us deep into what's going on in our lives. Do you find that a good percentage of your clients are really going through this, or is this other people that you're mentioning, or is this clientele as well?
I would say that the people that I work with who are my clients are being impacted because they are doing what you're doing, maybe not the same way, but they are going into the interior, as they say in the alchemist journey, visit the interior and there you will find the hidden stone, which is known as the philosopher's stone or the sorcerer's stone. So they're familiar, as you said, Charlie, they're familiar with the teachings. They know, oh, this is about me connecting deeper, and I'm already on my under divine direction. I'm already on a path of divine connection. And so now I'm just here to make sure I use the opportunity of COVID to refine my divine assignment. That's where they are. So they're impacted, but are they freaking out? Are they like, oh, we're not going to make it? No, because they've had a lot of inner conditioning. They are in a place of trust. And in fact, Charlie, let me just tell you, I'm getting messages and texts from clients saying, Dina, I got offered a job. Dina, I got offered a promotion. Dina, I got offered a raise. Who in the world is hiring at this time? They're stunned. So that is the general energy that people that I work one-on-one with are we're very blessed. We're doing well. We are prepared. I think you said I'm ready for this, or I've been waiting for this moment. They feel really incredibly prepared to be able to be in this moment, stand and serve other people, keep themselves together, and simply use this as an opportunity to refine the purpose they're already living.
Do you think, I had a question for you personally, and so let me ask you personally, and then we'll go on to your clients. I wanted to... earlier on, I wanted to get into what does your day look like, but I think I will eliminate that. But tell me, do you have time during your day in your busyness, because you have so many clients that so depend upon you, do you have time during your day to have respite and reflection on yourself?
Absolutely. It's a must. It is an absolute non-negotiable. So one of the things that has changed for me during this quarantine is that I am making certain to have even more space and time for reflection. Every morning, there's a non-negotiable, so this is my daily schedule. Every morning, there's a non-negotiable meditation and offering and prayer. And then I get in alignment with my mission or theme for the day. It's a single word, usually. And I think of it as, okay, if I can remember to stay in alignment with this mission, then I will have a successful and victorious day. And now, in addition to that, I always have that, and I always have an evening reflection or meditation, but I'm adding in some time in the middle of the day at some other point to do more. And so, yeah, it's important when things are so chaotic, when people are overall in the collective consciousness in so much dense fear and anxiety. That's not a judgment or an aspersion. We understand why they are, but when that is the case, it is even more important for me to make sure that I replenish, that I nourish, that I'm doing what I need to do to stay clear.
Yeah, that makes sense. I was reading this morning part of my process is reading Spiritual Insights, and I was reading Thomas Merton this morning, and he was talking about that the monk's life, the life of solitude, and this is really, and he just said not everybody is called to solitude, and the people that are called to solitude really don't have the gifts to live in community. He said, let me find this thing I'm looking for really quickly, and that it goes through the suggest the calling. I'm finding it. I'll have to remember it because I can't. Here it is. For the solitude in the monastery and mm-hmm. and these are in monasteries of solitude where they really don't talk. There's silence and solitude. Mm-hmm. He said we have the morning. We pray and work in the morning. We labor and rest in the afternoon, and then we sit again in meditation in the evening. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, that doesn't sound too bad. I think there's a part of me, if I didn't have a child and a wife, I could have been a monastic.
Yeah.
But there's something now when you do your work, let's help people with this work, because I think this is important work, you know, this sort of respite and reflective time. Mm-hmm. Is that a long time? Is that a 10-minute process for you? Is that an hour process? What does that look like?
Let me tell you, Charlie, years ago when I met the person who was to teach me meditation and teach me how to teach meditation, his name was Bishop John Drace, he said, Dina, now you need an hour a day as a baseline, but I'm not going to tell you that because you won't do it. So let's say forget about the hour for now and start with 15 minutes. And I always thought that was incredible because, of course, he was right. You know, with our modern kind of rate at which we live, that an hour, who has an hour? Oh, my God. So 15 minutes. And once I had gotten that down, then it kept growing and growing. And I would say now there are many days where, all told, between the morning, the afternoon, and the evening, I'm doing 2 or 3 hours. That is not doable or necessary for the 99% of people, that they don't need that much. They're not, you know, doing the kind of job I'm doing that relies so much on inner sight. But yeah, every day, if people who don't have a practice yet would institute, same thing. The good bishop said 15 minutes in the morning and 15 minutes at night of a gratitude or reflection practice, a meditation or prayer, something that works to uplift you and your soul and to get you out of the lamentation and the fear. I mean, especially at this time, we know all of the research from the scientific, the medical, the neurobiological communities tell us that when we spend time lamenting, when we spend time just locked in anxiety and fear, that we weaken everything. We weaken our
absolutely
first and foremost, and right now with what we're dealing with the virus, that's the last thing that we want to do.
Yeah, I'm fortunate, you know, I spend the majority of my time in the mornings, although I read in the evenings, but I, because of my job situation, which is non-existent, I'm able to spend 60 to 120 minutes in the morning, and it's in meditation. And I always have, you know, what I think helps people is some sort of meditative reading, and it doesn't have to be in the mystics and all. You know, I mean, I've read Ryan Holiday's Stillness is the Key, and that's sort of a how-to-ish kind of book, but it was really inspirational. And I didn't try to read the whole book and journal on it. I would read a paragraph, a chapter or a little bit, and then I would journal on that. But I'll tell you what has really been profound for me is journaling. Mm. And I wrote a post this week that quoted William Makepeace Thackeray, who is the author of Vanity Fair, born in 1811 and died in 1863.
I love that book, Charlie. And the first
What's
line?
That?
I've always loved that book. And the first line, there has never been a trouble done in the world, but a woman has been at the bottom of it. Is that one, or is that Barry Lyndon? It's one of his books.
I don't know. But this is, he has this quote that's really, it's really a profound quote. And he speaks in a masculine, you know, we don't have inclusive language in, you know, 100
right.
years,
yeah, no.
150 years ago. And he writes, there are 1,000 thoughts lying within a man that he does not know till he takes up a pen to write.
Mm-hmm.
And there is something about journaling that I encourage people, even if you don't know what you're going to write in journaling, just start. And before you know it, something important is going to come out in that journal.
Yeah, well, you're pointing to something so essential when we talk about reimagining. You know, journaling allows you to connect with some voices that you maybe don't usually listen to, some flavors of feeling and thought that you are not always in touch with. So at a time like this, when there is, as we said, a reshuffling of the deck, any of these practices, and especially some kind of connected writing, is priceless. You know, I don't know if you saw this film. It was done some years ago. It was called Contagion, and it has.
Oh yeah, I just watched it like last week, and I thought, oh my goodness, this is prophetic.
Yeah, well, he did a lot of research for that film. I mean, a lot of very, very precise research. And he was interviewed recently since COVID, and he said something. His name is Scott Burns. He said something fabulous. He said, right now, this meaning this, the entire quarantine situation, is an opportunity for our country, as divided as we are, to find a common cause. And this goes back to purpose, is what we're talking about. And then he went on to paraphrase a friend of his, a gentleman named Dr. Larry Brilliant, who's an epidemiologist, and apparently that guy has said that love is a big part of survival in these situations. The questions, do you love someone enough to take care of yourself and respect their vulnerability? Do you have basic compassion for people less fortunate than you? There is.
And you know what? And you know what's unfortunate? What's very frustrating to me, especially as, and we're going to go on break in just 1 second. What's frustrating for me is the protests that are now coming up is just, and even though they're, you know, the press likes to make them like they're major protests. There was one that had 2,000 people. Most of them have less than 50 people in the protests. Mm-hmm. So it's not, it's not giant protests, but it's the rise of divisivism and, and it's very disheartening for me that at a time when we need cohesion and working together as one nation and working together in belief, you know, that's difficult. And, you know, rarely do I speak about our leadership, but, you know, I don't think we have the kind of leadership that, that in, you know, engenders cohesion. We have one that, that engenders divisiveness and, and that's a very sad thing. You know, now look what I want to do is I want to talk after the break. There's something we skipped that I had. Well, you don't know we skipped, but it skipped on my notes.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, you weren't reading my notes. But you used a term that I, and that is a destiny pathway, the notion of a destiny pathway. And you've been speaking on it, but I'd like to elaborate on that and go to another very important quote that you have. But before we do that, let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back. Okay, Dina?
All right.
Hi, this is Charlie Hedges, and you're listening to The Next Chapter with Charlie and my special guest, Dina Crowder, my my personal coach with whom I have not spoken since 2019. And we are catching up, and we are talking about what I'm sort of simply titling Surviving or Thriving in a Quarantine Situation. And Dina has talked about people having an opportunity to reflect, whether they like it or not, to reflect on the values of their life. Are we accomplishing what we want to accomplish in life, or are we merely in pursuit of the American dream, which is money, houses, cars, and all of that sort of thing, and prestige, rather than divine mystery and who we are inside. Now, in light of that, you had, in a text or a Facebook post, I can't remember, but you had mentioned the notion of a destiny pathway. I think that kind of sums up what you're talking about. Do you, Dina, that it's a destiny pathway?
I do. When a lot of the illusions of significance or the things that have kept us busy and engaged fall away, and we are totally uncertain, which is what's happening now. It's a moment of crisis, but it's also a moment of opportunity, and things are wide open. So what is occurring is there's a chance for us at a deeper level than we usually operate. And that means we usually are operating from our personality that's very habituated to functioning in whatever society we're in. Well, all those bets are off. There's an opportunity for us to go into the interior castle of our soul, of our deeper self. This is not a religious conversation, by the way. It's the part, it's where the...
Except you are quoting Mother Teresa or St. Teresa of Avila.
Yeah, the interior castle is St. Teresa. That is her word. That is absolutely right. But it's not a religious thing to go there.
No, no.
Where the deepest part of you connects with the deepest part of life. It is that essential part of you. And right now, that is really available. And not only available, but we as individuals and as a collective, we are craving connection with it so that we can really feel, oh my goodness, this is where I am meant to stand, and this is how I am meant to serve. So there's even things that people who may not be yet ready for a full-on Charlie Hedges-style reflection and meditation practice, they can get started with having their own purpose party virtually during this time.
Describe that.
Some years ago when I was going through a life transition and I was asking some of these same questions, okay, I want to get in divine connection so I can update my direction and also upgrade with my divine assignment, I started gathering clues. And so this fact-finding mission, by the way, clues are everywhere, all over the place. We're drowning in these clues. We just don't pause to assess them. And so a simple way to do it, and this is what I did, is I went around and asked a dozen people who I respected in terms of their opinion, what am I best at?
What a great and also very vulnerable thing to do, because you fear the answer, nothing.
Can I call you back? Oops. Oh, thanks for, I did. I said, I'm on this destiny, purpose, mission, this quest here. What am I best at? And I was instructing them to be very succinct. They couldn't get verbose and flowery, just really bare bones.
Give me a couple sentences.
One person said, you are best at breaking down complex concepts and communicating them to anyone using any language they understand. Somebody else said, you're best at seeing the unseen. Somebody else said you're best at helping people transform what they don't know is blocking them. So after you do a few of these, everybody's giving you about a paragraph, well, then you have themes. You have these threads that are running through each of the contributions that you've been given. And what people could do is, once they've asked this purpose question and gotten their clues together, now on the internet, everyone's having virtual parties. So, hey, have a purpose party where you have a number of people and you each share the clues that you've gotten, and then have a discussion where you can receive further insight. But there is one rule I suggest at the purpose party, and it's that if somebody begins to qualify and self-deprecate and say, oh, well, you know, mine aren't as good as yours, and I don't know, and all of that, they have to do something. They have to clean the dishes or put a quarter in the kitty, something, because it's really important to simply notice how we may debit our own value, and this is a perfect time for, you said being vulnerable, and that's true. It is vulnerable, but it's really simply being open to receive. And if you can receive that in a context where you know you matter because everyone matters, and you're valuable because everyone's valuable, and everybody's here with a special gift that they have to give, this can really go a long way to helping you get online and take the first step, because the path is clear. Those things that were taking up our time and that maybe we were all hung up on before, they're not here right now. Those illusions have dissolved. We have an open pathway to do this kind of work.
That is so great. And you mentioned house cleaning and doing the dishes. Do you know one of the things for what I am most appreciated in family gatherings that are my family, my son's family, us, and my daughter-in-law's family? And you know what is one of the things that is most appreciated by me is that I do dishes all day long. I don't wait until we have a whole stack of dishes.
I am
a cleaner as I cooker. So I do a little bit of cooking, but I'm doing dishes, and that is so appreciated by the family, because by the time we eat dinner, we don't have this, horrible looking kitchen that is just, a terror to look at. We just have our dishes that we ate food on. All of our cooking utensils are cleaned. And I know that is something that is appreciated by people in our little community. And it's something as simple as doing dishes.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's an essential quality in there, Charlie, about not letting things get out of hand and pile up, about handling things as they come up. That may perhaps be part of your philosophy and formula for success, not just for yourself, but, in general, is, hey, don't wait until King Midas didn't clean his stables for 50 years. I think that's who it was in mythology. It's like, wait a minute. Let's not wait till it's 50 years down the line and it's we're drowning in you-know-what. Let's keep this moving as we go. But, it's also a power principle. In the way that I teach power, one of the principles that you and I have learned together and you've learned is power is intimate. It circulates. And we're not talking about, for your listeners, we're not talking about distorted power and domination and that force.
It's power to, not power over.
Exactly. Power to and with, not over. And in that scenario, the power is intimate and power circulates. So you are keeping the energy circulating by going ahead and cleaning up and doing the dishes. It's super valuable.
So did I get an A on my assignment then?
You do. You get 5 stars. I'm going to give you 5 stars after this.
Five stars. Okay, I have 2 questions for you before we close. And I have a question that I wanted to ask. I wanted to call in and ask Richard Rohr. And, he's the author that's so popular nowadays. No one knew him in 2017. And today he's got millions of followers on his podcast and his blogs and his daily devotionals. And as I'm studying mysticism and a contemplative prayer through them, love is such a key word. And you mentioned love as one of the qualities that are important in this self-discovery, who we are, what's important to us, our passions. Dina, I'm going to ask you an impossible question.
All right. Go ahead. Go for it.
I am vexed I am vexed by the concept of love, and especially the love of God. And quite honestly, I don't know what the hell it is. I mean, believe me, and this is coming after months and years of study, and I feel like I don't know what that means. The word has such a vast field of meaning, I don't know how to apply it to whatever situation I'm thinking of or reading of. How would you respond to that?
I understand why you think it's an impossible question, but I'm not sure that it is as impossible as you might be thinking, because, well, the impossible part would be giving a single definition that would work for everyone. That I'm not so sure about, because, as we just said, power is intimate. Well, so is God. Your relationship with the higher power, or by whatever name you call it.
Divine mystery, yeah.
Yeah, the universe, God, the Holy Spirit, Goddess. I mean, everybody's got a different name. And then in different languages, there's different ways of calling on God. So once we realize that it's extremely personal, and even in the Christian faith, you're called upon to have a very personal relationship with the divine, a personal relationship, if it's a Christian, with Jesus. That's said again and again.
Right.
So then I would say that what love becomes, in terms of God's love, has to do with an individual person's individual and very unique relationship with the divine in their life, how they communicate, how they feel loved. So for you, Charlie, if you're pursuing this question, there are probably some very specific moments where you really felt connected and loved by how you view God. And that's the nature and quality of God's love as it shows up for you, and it may show up for somebody else a little different.
Well, this is a long conversation, which I really knew I shouldn't have gotten into, because for me, it is, unfortunately, it's very cognitive, and it's not spiritual or emotive. And so I cognitively can comprehend this notion, but to have this feeling of a presence is very difficult.
But yeah, no, I hear that.
That's what God is taking me through.
Yeah, I hear that. And I certainly know that you will, after you will go on a journey with this, and then you will come back around full circle, and you will recognize moments. You know, like some of the moments where I have been most in awe and most stunned they've occurred in places of traditional worship as well, but have occurred in such radically different moments, like with a gentleman named George who was homeless, who lived two blocks away from me for some time. And I had an unbelievable experience of what people would call, God and divine grace, in speaking to this person again and again during the time that he was homeless in my neighborhood. So that's one of the ways that God shows up for me and shows up as love for me.
It's like Thomas Merton says, and the contemporaries say, it's a matter of staying awake.
Mm-hmm.
It's a matter of staying awake and paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's happening, and yet it could just slip right by me and I don't even see it. Mm-hmm. Now I have another 10-minute question that you've got 2 minutes to answer.
All right. Yes, sir.
I just got a smile from my producer. Okay. And so I want to quote you one last time. And this is something you wrote in a text to me.
Okay.
It's a bit of a longer quote, but I'll read it slowly enough. Aside from the very real, scary, and harsh economics, there is this thing happening around the ego needing to feel busy. People want to get back to normal, not only because they want to make money, which is necessary, but also because of the real terror is stillness. And that terror is about feeling threatened. It's uncomfortable, and the ego wants the potential introspection to end now. In other words, the ego doesn't want to think about it. The ego just wants you to do, does not want you to reflect, and does not want you to go beyond the ego into the unconscious and where the divine mystery truly dwells. What do you have to say about that?
Well, the ego is not this repository of bad. People have an assumption when you say ego that you're talking about an arrogant person.
I so agree with you.
And we're not talking about a person that's puffed up and arrogant and full of himself. We have a lot of examples of that, but that's not what we're talking about. We're speaking about simply the personality, the you that has an identity and that goes out and functions in the world. And the way that it's structured, it's a necessary element in human life. And the way that it's structured, it is structured to protect us, to keep us safe, and to keep us from going into unknown terrain. And guess where your purpose is? It's across the bridge that says, unknown terrain here. Guess where that feeling of the presence, which you just asked about, of love, higher love, where is that? Well, same sign. Unknown terrain here. And the human personality, the ego, says, we don't want to go there. So let's bring it into the time of the coronavirus. You're quarantined. You're at home. You can't do the busyness. You can't do the doing that you are used to. And the human personality / the ego, we're talking the psychological terminology of ego, where does it exist? And where does it have power? It has existence and power in time, in busyness, and in activity. When we step beyond that pattern and we allow ourselves stillness, we allow ourselves to receive, like even in the exercise of what am I best at, you said, gosh, that's vulnerable. We allow ourselves that moment of space to receive, to reflect, to write, to pray. Guess what? The personality is still there, but it's in the back seat now. It's not in control. It doesn't know exactly where the destination is. And if we don't have an awareness around this or some kind of practice around being able to place the personality in the back seat for these very important endeavors, then there's a sheer terror that exists. And I think that's what you're describing.
Boy, that is brilliantly stated. It's right in line with Richard Rohr's book, Falling Upward, that talks about first and second half of life and how you deal with the ego. And as much as I think I'm in second half of life, I am not as ego-driven or ego-manipulated, not driven, but ego-manipulated as I once was. Mm-hmm. Yet nevertheless, it pops up its ugly head all the time. It's not like it's ever dismissed, like it ever goes away, and I must be conscious of it and dependent on another resource. And and you named it so well, Dina Crowder. It is, you know, I now am reminded why I have you as a personal coach. You are freaking brilliant. Really, and you articulate very deep thoughts. You know, you're right that you can take very deep thoughts and articulate them in ways that are comprehensible to the average guy like me. I'm so grateful for you. I can't tell you how much I am grateful for you.
Oh, Charlie, you are a blessing, and I am unbelievably lucky to have you in my life. And thank you for having me on your show again. It's always fun.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for coming on the show. And do you want? Is there a special way you want people to get a hold of you?
Well, if they would like to reach out, they can go to dinacrowder.com. That's okay. Easy enough. And, shoot me a message. And, you know, there's also some free tools and resources that they can get. If they go to the website, they can see my TEDx talk, which is perfect for now, being in how to be in power, because the power is you at any time, even now. And also the In Power Guide, there's various things. So, I welcome them to check out the free resources that are available.
I would too, because you have some surprise. You take us down a road. I know I just experienced one of your seminars, your large seminars. You take us down a road where I think you know where you're going, where we're going, and then all of a sudden you throw a shocker question at me that just goes deep, and I just said, "Holy cow, where did that come from?" And it was just brilliant. So I encourage people to get a hold of you at dinacrowder.com. Check out your website. Check out your free resources. And I also want to thank our listeners for tuning in to The Next Chapter with Charlie. Be sure to check us out at our website, thenextchapter.life. And until next, this is Charlie Hedges signing off. Bye for now.
You've been listening to another example of Next Chapter with Charlie, right here in Orange County's only community radio station, octalkradio.net.